It's touted as the energy of the future.
It's a big deal today if you love the green hydrogen. The first refuelling network in Australasia is open. Four stations, South Auckland, Hamilton, Palmerston, North Tauranga.
Six international companies, including Air New Zealand and Airbus, have banded together to study opportunities for using green hydrogen to fuel aviation.
Currently, 99% of the world's hydrogen energy is generated using fossil fuels like natural gas or coal, which is cheap and efficient. These processes emit carbon that's either released into the air or captured and stored. Green hydrogen uses water.
And it's on the Prime Minister's radar.
We're determined to make sure that we deliver more renewable energy, and clean hydrogen's a really interesting proposition.
Kia ora, I'm Tom Kitchen, and today on The Detail, how is Aotearoa harnessing the power of green hydrogen? We follow the path that two organisations are on to transform the way we use energy. Later, we'll find out about one of the first trials in the world using green hydrogen at an airport. But first, GNS Science, the Crown Research Institute. It's opening up a new green hydrogen lab. Michelle Cook works there as an energy materials scientist, and she helps lead that work. She starts with the deceptively simple question, what
is
hydrogen?
It is the most abundant element in the universe, luckily for us. It's right up the top, number one on the periodic table, so it is the lightest element as well. As pure hydrogen, it does exist as a colourless, odourless gas, but here on Earth, it more commonly exists within other molecules, so things like water, H2O, as well as fossil fuels, all of those chemicals contain hydrogen, as well as what we call organic molecules, so things like carbohydrates, your proteins, your fats, all of those contain hydrogen. But when we're talking about hydrogen in this kind of context, we are talking about hydrogen gas. And so we can use these other molecules that contain hydrogen to make just pure hydrogen.
So we often refer to them as different colours. What are those different colours of hydrogen?
The hydrogen that we're talking about is always this kind of odourless, colourless gas. But we attribute these colours to the hydrogen to denote the way that we can make the hydrogen. At the moment, hydrogen is used all around the world. It's usually used as a kind of feedstock for industrial processes. And this is quite often what we call grey hydrogen. So the grey hydrogen is made using fossil fuels. So grey is for methane. So it's quite energy intensive in and of itself. And of course, uses the fossil fuels. So it's got quite a lot of carbon emissions associated with it. There is also sometimes called black or brown hydrogen that's made even dirtier processes using coal. And again, causing carbon emission. But then we also have the kind of new kinds of hydrogen that we talk about at the moment, which is either blue hydrogen that uses the same processes using fossil fuels, but with carbon capture. So there aren't the same carbon emissions associated with it. Or what we do, which is green hydrogen. So green hydrogen, instead of getting that hydrogen out of the fossil fuel molecules, we get the hydrogen out of water molecules. So the H2O is split into hydrogen as well as oxygen, and we do that via a process called electrolysis, which is basically where we just use electricity to split that molecule. And so if we use renewable electricity, then there are no carbon emissions associated with the entire process, and it is a zero carbon energy storage or fuel.
But there's also natural and or white hydrogen, isn't there? What exactly is that?
In addition to those other colours, people call it white hydrogen, which is naturally occurring hydrogen. So it does naturally occur beneath the earth. So we can find these little deposits of naturally occurring hydrogen as well.
There's a bit of a issue that's happening in New Zealand now, isn't that right?
We could be sitting on a gold mine, Olivine Rock, which produces natural hydrogen.
Yes, so that's becoming a little bit more popular across the world. Australia are a bit ahead of New Zealand and looking into naturally occurring hydrogen. Here in New Zealand, we do have the issue around who owns that hydrogen, which is what's kind of been the discussion at the moment.
An ownership spat is brewing between Māori and the Crown as New Zealand uses more renewable energy technologies like hydrogen.
Hydrogen isn't included under the Crown Minerals Act, and Māori are no stranger to laying ownership claims to resources, including water.
Before we can look into actually getting that hydrogen out of the earth here in New Zealand, we need to look at those kind of issues as well.
Who owns hydrogen? Do you think Māori have a right?
Well, that's
a
conversation we've got into at the moment.
But it's a question that may soon require an answer.
Tell me about this new lab that you're operating at GNS. Where is it? What does it look like?
It looks like a pretty standard chemistry lab. It's located at the National Isotope Centre of Geonius. That's in Lower Hutt, where I work. It's got a bunch of equipment within the lab that is specially designed for us to test the materials that we produce.
Okay, so what do you hope to get out of this? What is the aim of producing green hydrogen in this lab?
So we're working on reducing the cost of hydrogen. At the moment, hydrogen, if you were to buy it, green hydrogen, it's very expensive. And this is because it's still a reasonably new technology to produce it in this green way. So we're working on making it more efficient so we can get more hydrogen with less electricity and making the components of the system that makes the hydrogen out of cheaper materials as well.
And what are those really expensive tools? What makes it so expensive?
There are a couple of quite rare metals that are used in the process. So things like platinum and iridium and ruthenium. People are probably familiar with platinum, quite expensive to use. So, and you need a reasonable amount of them. So we're looking at ways to either reduce the amount that you need to still achieve the same result, or if we can make new materials that will perform in the same way as these materials. So green hydrogen has a lot of potential uses. Anywhere that you can kind of think of that you use a fuel like petrol or natural gas, in theory, you could use hydrogen. And it can also be converted back into electricity. And so it can kind of be used in the same way that we'd use a battery. The real benefits of hydrogen itself is that it can be used directly. You can burn it just like natural gas, so you can achieve those high temperatures, which is quite useful in kind of industrial processes where you can't electrify it. And it also has quite a high energy density by weight. So in uses where you need a lot of energy but you don't want to have to weigh it down, like heavy trucking, hydrogen is starting to become quite a favourable option for a decarbonised economy.
But in particular, in your lab, are you working on any specific projects?
In our lab, we focus a lot on the production of hydrogen, which is kind of agnostic of whatever use it's going to end up in. But some of the work that we're doing in the kind of using of hydrogen is actually looking at a little bit in that industrial processing for high temperature applications. And we're also working with some rural communities to see if hydrogen could be a good option for energy storage, so they can have a kind of microgrid within their community. We're actually working with Marae in the first instance to see if they can capture their own solar energy for the electricity and then store it in hydrogen so that they're nice and resilient. So they can kind of generate, store, and use energy all within their community so that if they are cut off in, say, flooding and things like that, with climate change, seeing more and more of these kind of really significant weather events, they'll know that they're always going to be able to have energy so they can kind of keep everyone warm and dry and wait until the help can come.
Yeah, so whereabouts is that happening?
So the marae we're working with is in the Eastern Bay of Plenty. It's just kind of at the top of Te Uruwera, about 30 minutes out of Whakatane, so it's kind of easy enough for us to access, but still suits that remote community. And they're across the Whakatane River, so they do sometimes get cut off from the town. At the moment, they rely on a diesel generator as backup. But obviously, as we saw after Cyclone Gabrielle, sometimes it can be hard to access diesel to fuel those generators in a disaster situation.
Right. So when do you hope to get that all up and working?
So at the moment, we're just investigating whether it's going to be a good option. We're going through and collecting a bunch of data about the energy that they would potentially have available through solar, as well as how much energy they use and how much kind of at once, so that we can do some modelling and put together a few scenarios that will inform their decision making going forward. So that modelling and stuff should be finished in the next few months. And after that, they will be able to make the decision about whether they think it's a good idea to implement something like that.
There are a handful of companies around New Zealand that are investing in green hydrogen and kind of thinking up innovative ways to move towards a low carbon economy with green hydrogen. Can you give me some examples?
So we work with a bunch of the industry to kind of support them deploying hydrogen. So people like Haringa and HW Richardson, so this is in the kind of heavy trucking transport industry, looking to deploy some hydrogen trucks in New Zealand. So New Zealand Post have actually bought a hydrogen fuel cell truck. So Haringa are based in New Plymouth. They are opening four hydrogen refueling stations this year. Those will be in the main kind of trucking routes in the North Island, so Auckland, Tauranga, Taupo and Palmerston North.
A bus, an NZ Post delivery truck and a big rig were among the first vehicles to fuel up at a new hydrogen fuel station in Whitty. Andrew Clinett is the co-founder of Headinger, the company behind the hydrogen network.
We could do up to 60 trucks from this station. And that is taking 60 trucks off the road. And that's each truck's equivalent to taking between 100 and 150 cars off the road.
Currently, there are only two trucks in the country that can use the hydrogen pumps in Whitty.
And HW Richardson are based down in Southland, and they own the kind of allied fuel network as well as the trucking as well. So they can kind of look at both the supply and demand side of it, which is really exciting. So they are looking to open a refueling station in Gore. In their trucks, they're using dual fuel. So instead of a fuel cell vehicle like the New Zealand Post truck, they are actually converting their own trucks to burn both diesel and hydrogen when it's available, but they can still also just burn diesel. So it's a really good kind of interim solution to start New Zealand on that journey. And then obviously those trucks will then start moving through into other companies' fleets to enable more and more companies to kind of get into the hydrogen.
And then hopefully they'll move off that diesel into full green hydrogen in years to come.
Exactly. Once the supply starts kind of catching up, it's a really good way to kind of offset that supply and demand issue, yeah.
Cool. And anything else happening?
There's also some really cool kind of collaborations going on in the aerospace industry. So there is a hydrogen consortium, and they're looking at being able to use green hydrogen to power some of the domestic flight routes in New Zealand. So because of our kind of geography, a lot of the distances that we fly could potentially be powered by green hydrogen to start decarbonizing the flight in New Zealand as well, which is really exciting because New Zealand actually has the sixth highest carbon emissions per capita in aviation.
Does it really? Wow. Okay. Yeah. I didn't realize it was so high. Why do you think that is?
It's mostly around the fact that we don't have like a really well-connected kind of rail network. Like there's not that many other options. If you want to move around, you're really just driving or flying. And because a lot of our domestic flights are quite short, the flying routes do look quite desirable to a lot of people.
Now, what exactly has been happening to use green hydrogen in the air to get those high emissions down? To that consortium, which Air New Zealand is a part of, keep in mind it's one of the first trials in the world, so it's very early days. But Jacob Snellgrove, who leads the airline's next generation aircraft program, is here to explain.
We ran a trial with hydrogen at Wellington Airport for 10 days, and that was to trial hydrogen producing electricity, which then went on to charge some of our GSE or ground service equipment, which loads bags and whatnot into aircraft. So the trial's now being wound up, so it sort of achieved its outcomes, where we were able to get hydrogen to an airport and have that form a useful use case for us. We used 30 kilos of hydrogen over that 10 days and successfully charged a number of our GSE carts.
So your GSE carts, those are the ground service carts, so we're looking at like electric tug service vehicles and that?
Correct, yeah. And these are electric tugs that we already have. And so the point isn't for us to go and purchase a number of hydrogen-powered GSE vehicles in the short term. This was a easy way for us to get hydrogen airside and start charging these vehicles. And that allowed us to understand the regulations that we had to overcome, consents. Doing that, it kind of unlocks the next stage for us, which will be how would we do some hydrogen refueling airside, which is where we need to get to if we're to have hydrogen-powered aircraft operating.
How does it compare sustainability-wise to electric vehicles?
For us, energy efficiency is always the key driver, so that's why we have electric-powered tugs, because they are really energy efficient and also, you know, low carbon emissions, which is great. The transition to hydrogen and why we use hydrogen in this trial was really about proving out the technology and solving the regulatory and the certification issues that we need to overcome to get hydrogen at an airport. The use of hydrogen in those sort of vehicles could happen in the future, but most of the time, electrifying and using a battery is better. It's when you have really heavy transport or aircraft that you need hydrogen, because hydrogen allows you to fly further and carry more, but it does consume more energy than if you were just using a battery.
So the end game is using hydrogen gas fuel cells in aircraft to turn an electric motor on a plane.
And that's hugely beneficial for us because it would allow us to decarbonise a lot of our turboprop fleet in New Zealand, which is our goal in the 2030s. Those aircraft we've got between 50 and 70 seats. And so that's why we're doing these sort of small-scale trials at airports now, which might not make a lot of sense in their individual context, but they're adding up to this sort of long-term goal that we've got to decarbonise our turboprop fleet.
And is this the first time that green hydrogen has been used in an airport setting?
Yeah, so that was a really cool achievement for us. We've recently just had Bristol Airport come in the UK, second to us, but this was one of the first key trials of using hydrogen in a real application. And now there's
a
few
more.
It's one of the first in the world. There's been some in California, some in the UK, and that's sort of all happened in the last year, really.
Yeah.
So it's been, and again, a lot of them are similar to the trial in Bristol. They're using small use cases where the technology is available, building to that bigger solution, which is hopefully having hydrogen-powered aircraft in the next decade.
What kind of fuel do you use at the moment?
So right now, all of our aircraft are powered by kerosene or jet fuel, essentially. Jet fuel is a great form of energy and has powered aircraft successfully for years, but it creates significant carbon emissions, which is why we're exploring these different opportunities.
Okay.
And in the future, you could have battery electric aircraft power flight, and that's what we've announced recently with our aircraft flying between Wellington and Mulberry Airport. That will be a battery electric aircraft.
Well, Air New Zealand has just announced Wellington to Marlborough will be the first route for its first all-electric aircraft, the Beta Alia. It'll begin cargo-only New Zealand Post flights with a short hop across Cook Strait in 2026.
And then hydrogen is another solution in the bunch of different levers we've got, and then also sustainable aviation fuel, which is more of a liquid fuel.
Air New Zealand's increasing its use of sustainable jet fuel in a bid to cut carbon emissions. It's signed on for 9 million litres of Neste aviation fuel made from renewable waste at a Singapore refinery.
Sustainable aviation fuel is kind of a catch-all bucket for things like cooking oil, there's forestry waste, all sorts of feedstocks which are more sustainable than oil refined out of the ground to create a fuel which looks like and smells like jet fuel but has much less life cycle emissions.
And then where's your plan with green hydrogen? So that's what we want to focus on.
For green hydrogen and battery, we're really focused on advancing both those technologies to hopefully be able to decarbonise our turboprop fleet. They make up anywhere just circa less than 10% of our total emissions. But from a domestic point of view, they make up 40 to 50% of our entire domestic network. So it's a really meaningful share, and Kiwis travel on them all the time. And the beauty of our domestic network here in New Zealand is that we have a huge number of short-range flights compared to, say, other airlines, which means that while this technology is new and the range and how much it can carry isn't as good as what we'd expect from our current aircraft, we've actually got a great use case here to deploy the planes as opposed to, say, competitors in other markets where their average distances they fly are much longer. So this hydrogen trial in Wellington, of which we'll do more of, to try and create the ecosystem ready for these aircraft, because we need government regulations, aerospace regulations at the Civil Aviation Authority control. We need airports and infrastructure and the energy sector to support us on this transition. It's not an easy transition for the aviation sector. So,
Why not?
Just because of the change in the infrastructure needed, the different energy sources we'll need, and aviation is heavily regulated, which is why it's the safest form of transport. And so to get those regulations changed, it's not a quick process, and we don't want it to be a quick process. But we need to take action if we're to address the significant carbon emissions that we create.
So we're not going to see this on, flights to, LA or New York or, those big kind of destinations. It's purely domestic, right? That's what you're saying.
Yeah, so in the 2030s, we're focused on that regional turboprop aircraft. Once you get out towards the 2050 period and beyond, then hydrogen certainly starts to offer opportunities for you to decarbonise flights to Australia and beyond that. But for us, we focus very much on the now. And if we're to get an aircraft in 2030, we need to be really taking action now to get all of the different parts of the system ready for that aircraft to arrive in 2030.
How advanced is green hydrogen in aircrafts around the world? Is it really early days?
It is early days in respect to if you wanted to buy a hydrogen-powered aircraft, you couldn't buy one. We're hoping to be one of the first in the world to be able to buy one. And we've partnered with a number of really quite incredible companies around the world now which have got aircraft flying. So they've taken the conventional combustion fuel engine out and replaced that with a hydrogen fuel cell. And they're now flying those aircraft. And one of the most probably meaningful engagements we've got is with Airbus, who are in the process now of exploring up to a 100-seat hydrogen-powered aircraft, which could be here for 2035. And that's a real meaningful aircraft to unlock a huge decarbonisation potential for us domestically, but also it's a really well-suited aircraft for our domestic network in the 2030s if they were to build it. So we've partnered with Airbus as a part of a consortium in New Zealand to be able to understand what New Zealand would have to do for us to be able to fly these big hydrogen-powered aircraft that Airbus want to bring, hopefully in the 2030s. So seeing the work Airbus has done and is doing has given us a real kind of motivation to get New Zealand ready for those aircraft and try to lead the world in that respect.
You know, it sounds pretty exciting, but I mean, a lot of people will be thinking, you know, this all sounds pie in the sky, you know, really big picture thinking, but what does it mean for me, you know? What does it mean for the cost that I'm paying to go on the plane?
It will mean that you can get on a plane in the 2030s and not have to worry about the carbon emissions that your travel would otherwise be creating. It means that when you get on an aircraft, you can trust that the energy that's powering that plane has come from the New Zealand energy sector. That's New Zealand jobs, that's New Zealand energy powering these aircraft, where today that fuel is brought offshore. All of our billions of dollars we spend on fuel heads off to overseas markets, where this will be that money becoming, you know, New Zealand economy jobs, growth domestically here. In the first instance, these aircraft are not going to be really cheap to operate. But this is the first generation of these aircraft. And when we look back on the first generation of jet aircraft we operated in the 60s, and if we wanted to wait 10, 20, 30 years for them to become cheaper, they wouldn't have, because people have to buy them, people have to learn about them, and then the price will come down. So in time, these aircraft will be able to offer lower operating costs. They will offer greater jobs and economic growth for New Zealand, and it will allow us to travel without the carbon emissions that we currently create getting people around New Zealand today.
Yeah, you're making it so the future sound pretty utopian there, Jacob. I like it. But, I mean, are there any downsides or challenges to green hydrogen?
Yeah, well, I had to be an optimist. I can't not be an optimist in this job.
Of course.
But there are certainly significant challenges in just how the technology evolves. The people making these aircraft are betting the whole company on this technology happening, and they need companies like us to back them for them to get the funding to keep building these aircraft. But if the market demand isn't there from larger players globally, then these aircraft just won't get built. And that's an unfortunate reality that we face, which is why we're trying to do this so publicly, because we have to provide the market pull that there is airlines out there and then convince other airlines to back the technology for them to make it.
Why might some airlines not want to embrace green hydrogen?
It's just because they have large fleets today, right? If you take some of the big global airlines, they've got hundreds and hundreds of aircraft. And if they're doing this to decarbonize, that involves changing out all of those aircraft, which is really costly, really complicated. And so they're looking for the more simpler solutions, where this for us does form a real great simple solution for our particular domestic need. But we've got a great use case for it, where those other airlines have much more complex fleets and they're looking for other fuels and other markets to try and make it happen.
That's it for today. Thanks to Michelle Cook and Jacob Snellgrove. The detail is funded by RNZ and NZ On Air. This episode was engineered by Phil Bench. It was produced by Alexia Russell and Davina Zimmer. I'm Tom Kitchen. Ma te wa.